This edition of Meet the Writers was first broadcast on the 30th of January 2016 on Monocle 24. Welcome to Meet the Writers with me, Georgina Godwin. And today, the writer I meet is a man who's probably Chile's foremost living author. He's the creator of the fantastically popular character Caetano Brulé. Roberto Ampuero is a Chilean author, columnist, a former university professor. His series of detective novels have sold more than 40 editions in Chile. He's won numerous awards, including Book of the Year and the best Spanish novel in China. He's lived and written about living in both East and West Germany, Cuba and Sweden. He was Chile's ambassador to Mexico, as well as the country's Minister of Culture. He now splits his time between Iowa and Chile, and today he's passing through London. Roberto, thank you so much for coming in. It's really fortuitous that we met really in the middle of the countryside, in the middle of nowhere.
That's true.
And here we both are back in London and in front of a microphone, which is where I was itching to get you the minute we met, because what an interesting life. How extraordinary. And I wonder if you could tell me about your early life growing up in Chile.
Well, I grew up in Valparaíso, in Chile, at the seaside, at the ocean, the Pacific Ocean. I attended a German school, and that was my first contact with foreign cultures and foreign language. I learned first to write and read in German, then in Spanish. And I think that was a kind of door that opened at that time for me and showed me a bit of the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And I left Chile while I was a student at the University of Chile in Santiago de Chile, 3 months after the coup d'etat from dictator Augusto Pinochet.
So that would have been 1973.
1973. Yeah. And I went to East Europe.
And this was because you'd already joined the Communist Youth Party in Chile.
I was very young when I joined the Communist Youth Organization. I was 17 years old. And my parents were very surprised by that, because my father was a social democrat, a very moderate person, and my mother a Catholic conservative. And I became a communist. And then when Pinochet took power, I left the country and went to East Germany because I was a communist.
What did you do in East Germany?
Well, in East Germany, I started to study in Leipzig at the Karl Marx University. And I started to study Marxist-Leninism. Why at that time? I was very young. I was 20 years old. And Chileans were suffering a lot under the dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet. But at the same time, many of the Chileans thought we would return to power soon. And one of the important things for the party, the Communist Youth Organization, was to have people who should know about Marxist-Leninism. And so I decided to attend and to study Marxist-Leninism in Leipzig.
And then it all changed because of a woman. You left the country, and not just any woman, because she was really quite an important woman, not only in your own life, but also in her own political legacy.
Right. Yes, I met a very young, she was 18 years old, and she was from Cuba. And she was the daughter of an important politician from Cuba, close friend of Fidel Castro. And when we were dating, the father was informed, he was ambassador, I think, at that time to Yugoslavia. He was informed that his daughter was having a relationship with a Chilean they didn't know. That was a Cuban security, political police who informed him that. So he immediately traveled to East Germany to meet me. And then he said, okay, I don't know you. We are a revolutionary family. I know you love my daughter. My daughter loves you. But if you want to continue this romance, my daughter will immediately, tomorrow, she will take the plane back to Cuba forever. And if you love her, you should follow her and go to Cuba. But first we will see if our security allows you, scrutiny allows you to enter the country. If you have no problems, if you don't work for the CIA, if you don't work for Pinochet's secret police, you will be welcome in Cuba. And then you can marry my daughter and live there. And that's how I went to Cuba. I'm 20 years old. My love was 18 years old, and that's how I went to Cuba and started to know the leadership of the island. And in 1976, 3 years after that, I decided to leave the Communist Youth Organization.
You were very disillusioned by then with communism?
Yeah, you know, but not in theoretical terms, because it was not an intellectual development as such. I was too young for that, I assume. But it was because the real life, a daily life in Cuba, was for me something that brought me to think about the system. And I decided I don't want Pinochet system for Chile, but I don't want neither the Castro system for my country. There must be something different, another way. I couldn't see that way as an alternative at that time, because at that time in Latin America, you have to remember, Cold War in Latin America, a lot of dictatorships, right, in terms of political positions, dictatorship. And I said, is there any other way besides Castro and besides Pinochet? For me, today, it sounds very strange. But at that time, very young, and under the influence of Marxist-Leninism, I couldn't see a third alternative, a different alternative to that.
So you left Cuba and you went back to East Germany.
I couldn't leave the socialist world. It was not easy at that time because of the Cold War to travel and return to the West, although I wanted to return to West Europe. And it took me around 3 years to leave East Germany and to go back to West, in this sense, to West Germany. I wanted to return to the West when I was living in Havana, and that was in 1976, but it was not possible to return immediately. So it took me a long time to return. In 1983, I could return to the West, and this time to Germany, West Germany, to Bonn, when Bonn was the capital of West Germany. And I worked as a journalist there. And my subjects were relations between Europe and Latin America, relations between Europe, Latin America, and the United States. It was a wonderful, very interesting time for me. And I was living in Bonn when the wall fell. And since I lived before in East Germany, then my news agency, IPS, International Press Service, decided to send me to Berlin to report about what was happening there. And that is a time I will never forget, because in the past I had seen the communist world, the countries behind the wall, and they seemed to be so strong, so powerful. And you had the impression that this would last very, very long, this division in Europe and the Cold War. But suddenly, everything changes from one day to another in terms of the Communist Party was not in power anymore, in charge of the state anymore. And I can remember walking through the streets of East Berlin, writing about that, and having that feeling that political power was on the street. It was not anymore in the Communist Party. It was not anymore in any place. It was just in the streets, people demanding and deciding what they wanted to do. I think that was one of the most freest moments of Germans. They had the decision, the power of the decision. And that is, for me, a lesson in history, what power, political power means, how fragile it is at the end. That all systems, including dictatorships, are based on a sense of agreement. And when people suddenly say, we don't accept that agreement anymore, we don't accept these conditions anymore, that anything can happen and change, that's for me a lesson, incredible lesson.
Mm. Really extraordinary times that you've lived through. It was also, you also started writing then. I mean, obviously you were a journalist and you'd been writing some short stories whilst in Cuba, but this was when you wrote your first book.
Yes. You know, I had the impression when I left Chile under Pinochet and I crossed the border between West Germany and East Germany and I went to live behind the wall. And then when I went to live in Havana and got to know the leadership of Cuba, I had the impression I was living under circumstances I should one day narrate. And that was very strong in my mind. This relation between fiction, because I love to write short stories, but this very interesting relation between fiction and reality. And I felt that. And when I left the communist countries and returned to the West, I had the impression I had a lot to tell, because people were asking me about my life there. And that's why I think I decided to write novels that are related, very close related, although fiction, very close related to historical moments of Europe or of Latin America.
Because you've almost invented a new genre, haven't you? It's a kind of autobiographical novel.
Yes. My first book in English language in Great Britain is the Neruda case. This is more about the detective and related to Pablo Neruda, the Nobel Prize winner of Chile. But what I develop as a kind of novel based on memories, the question behind memoirs is, are we able to tell things as they were? I am completely convinced that we changed a lot of things. We change a lot of things when we remember and when we tell them. And I think this is a good bridge to fiction, because fiction is something related to reality, but it's not the reality. And memoirs and memory is related to reality, but it's not the same as reality. So that's why I stress when I write these novels, I tell my readers, look, this is how I remember this time. It's related to fiction as well. I don't try to write the record of things that happen. I just try to write what I remember of that time. And that's more or less the genre I
And wonderful to be able to kind of fictionalize it. If you didn't like what happened, you can change it.
Yeah, but you know, it's not that you do that consciously. Something is already there in your mind that when you try to recall things, some of them you are not going to write about that because you don't remember that. Probably you will meet another person or find some old friend one day who will tell you, don't you remember that? You were there. And you will say, honestly, I cannot remember. Mm-hmm. But now that you are telling me that, you're right. So if you say to the readers, these are my memories, but this is a novel based on memories, and these memories are not 100% true, you are being very honest towards your readers.
Yeah. I wonder how much you collaborate and get the, not so much the input, but get the agreement of those you write about. I know that in my own experience, my brother writes memoirs, which are obviously about the life of our family. And so the family would get an ultimate sign-off on that, so that even if what's said in the book wasn't necessarily what happened, once we've all agreed, that becomes the narrative, that becomes the new reality.
Well, if you write a novel based on what you remember, you are more free to tell the story. Sometimes I change names of some people in order not to get into the private lives of those people. For example, if I write about dictatorship in Chile under Pinochet or dictatorship in Cuba under Castro, the names of the people are not important as such. Perhaps the most important thing is the atmosphere in which you lived at that time. Mm. To recall that and to write about that and depict it, that's the most important. Names are not so important.
One name is very important, that of your fictional detective, Cayetano Brulé. He's the reason you're so famous in Latin America.
Cayetano Brulé is a Cuban. He was born in Havana and he lives in Chile today. And he is a detective who travels a lot investigating. He's related to voyages. And he is being translated into different languages, 14 languages. It's very strange because, you know, when you write in your room, more or less for yourself, and suddenly you see that books are being published about Cayetano Brulé in Japan and Korea, South Korea and China, and in Europe and United States. It's a very strange feeling. You never know what appeals to the reader, to the readers when you write. If you could, it would be very easy to get in touch with readers. But every time you write a novel, you don't know what will happen with that novel. Every time you write a novel, it's like the first time writing a novel. Cayetano Brulé travels through the world. And what I try to do with him is to show the world from the perspective of someone from the Southern Hemisphere. Usually when you watch films or read novels written or made in United States or Europe, and they talk or show Latin America, you have the point of view of the Northern Hemisphere from the so-called developed world. With my character, Cayetano Brulé, as in the Neruda case, my novel here published in United Kingdom, I try to show the world from the point of view of the Southern Hemisphere, from someone who comes from the Southern Hemisphere, speaks the language, understands what's going on, belongs to a similar culture, but a different culture at the same time. And that's what I think appeals or is interesting for readers around the world.
Is he you?
No, it's not me. You know, I think it's a bit of different people. He has two souls, a Latin American soul, but divided into two. One of them, since he's Cuba, is the Caribbean Latin American or American soul, one that is related to that climate, to that geography, to that culture, to the influence of Africa in the music and food and everything and race. And the other part of this soul belongs to the Southern Cone soul of America, of Latin America, related to Chile, Argentina, Uruguay. This is Latin America, but it's so different from the Caribbean, more or less, Latin America. And both souls are in Cayetano Brulé. He's able to travel through Latin America and understand the countries. And since he has lived also, before going to Chile, in the United States, he gets to understand as well the developed world. And that allows him to get in dialogue, to investigate, to do research in Europe or in United States, as in Latin America or Asia.
Now, out of that has also grown Chile's first television detective series, which you wrote.
Right. That was a very interesting experience. It was in the 90s, and that was called Brigada Escorpión, like Scorpion Brigade. And I wrote this script in the histories, and that is such a different experience if you are a novelist. When you are a novelist and you write your story and you write your book, you are the only author of that. And that is it's an interesting experience. But to write for TV in this case, it was absolutely different because you start writing your story and then the actor has something to say, the producer has something else to say, the director has something else to say. So at the end, the product is sometimes very, very different from what you wrote at the beginning. That it does not happen in literature. I had mixed feelings. I never returned to do something like that again. I prefer to be the owner of my own writing until it has been published, because at that time it doesn't belong to you anymore. It belongs to the reader's imagination.
And the reader's imagination in so many countries. How many languages have you been translated into now?
14 languages. And that's always an enigmatic relation with people you will never see, cultures probably you will never get to know. But this is a magic connection between this small place, the room, would say Virginia Woolf, where you write, and isolated from everything, more or less isolated, and then the book circulating in different continents and different languages. And then you realize what literature is. It's a kind of message that the interpretation differs from culture to culture, from individual to individual. You are never able to manage that impact. You just write, and then I always say that every book has its own destiny. You never know what will happen with that book.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about your government roles, because you were the Chilean ambassador to Mexico. How did that come about?
You know, I was invited by the president, Sebastián Piñera, to become ambassador because I was a writer, because I am a writer. I don't belong to any party. I'm independent. I consider myself a liberal in terms of values and economy, but I don't belong to any party. And he said, Mexicans have a very strong culture, and they have sent many times important intellectuals as ambassadors to other countries, also to Chile. And since our economic and political relations are very close between Mexico and Chile, I would love to have you as an ambassador, because you are an author and you have a kind of political experience, and Mexicans will see that with very good eyes. And that's how I became ambassador. As an ambassador, you have also a good group of advisors with you. So that's also important. But for a writer, at least for a Latin American novelist, to be in Mexico as ambassador of your country is one of the most pleasant experiences you can have, because Mexico is so strong in terms of culture. It's so strong in different in terms of different cultures, and it has, like India, a millenary history. And that is very, very different from what we have in Chile. Chile is very young in comparison to Mexico in Mexican history before Columbus, before Europeans arrived. Civilizations and cultures, the Mayas, Aztecs. So it was a wonderful experience, a very important experience in my life.
Now, we spoke earlier in this chat about how you rejected the way that Pinochet ran the country, but also how Castro ran his country, and that there had to be a third way. Now, presumably that's something you're now at ease with in Chile, because, of course, you took up a government role as Minister of Culture. What is the third way, and does it work?
You know, after so many years and after getting to know communist systems and also dictatorships in Latin America, as the one from Pinochet, I think that there is that my mistake, I start now in personal terms, was to think that there is a concrete utopia you can follow and you can impose over your citizens. That is a mistake that leads, Isaiah Berlin would say that, Popper would say the same, that leads at the end to imposing to your citizens your ideal of society. What I think is healthier and most democratic and respects freedom and is that you put in the center, for example, in your horizon to develop and deepen democracy, to protect individual freedom, to protect and foster human rights. And that's what you should do. And the country and the individuals and the people and the parties should work in this frame to build a new, a better country. But the mistake is to have this concrete utopia, like a shopping list. Mm-hmm. And that is a mistake that leads to, at the end, to authoritarian regimes. I think that when you are young, and at that time I became a communist, when you're young, you have, or you feel you have almost, you have answers to almost all problems in of the world, especially if you are committed to a political ideology. Mm. When you become older, you realize that you have more questions than answers. And that makes you, or could make you, to a more democratic person, more liberal person, to be able to understand your own limits and to acknowledge them. Mm. That's important for me now at this age.
Your time as Minister of Culture, is culture something that can be legislated?
No.
For?
What you should do is you should create and foster a kind of frame supporting that with resources from public and also private sector. That's important. So artists and writers and musicians can find an atmosphere and a space where they can produce in freedom. My experience, especially in communist countries, what I can remember about the policy of cultures was to impose too many things, to put ideals, to say and define the subjects and the themes for writers and filmmakers. As in a democratic country, the Minister of Culture has to be far away from that, just to create conditions for more freedom. At the end, it's that. And you have to be very careful with that. I always said to my colleagues in Chile, many of you, the only thing, or the most important thing for many of you, is to get money and resources from the government. I never ask from the government for money to write any novel or to anything. And I would suggest to you, be careful with that, because there is no free lunch. At the end, you have to try to become independent and to depend perhaps from your books, from the selling of your books, for your presentations, lectures. But don't become dependent from government and political parties. And the best for you is if also private donors can add their resources, if you need resources, to the governmental ones.
unfortunately, we're running out of time, but I want us just to talk a little bit more about your latest book translated into English, because, as we know, Caetano Brulé is an international sensation. The books have sold worldwide incredibly well. The Neruda case, readers are introduced to your hero as he takes on his first case as a private eye. So it's set pre-Pinochet.
Yes, the Neruda case, this novel of Caetano Brulé, narrates the last months of life of Pablo Neruda. Pablo Neruda lives and dies short after Salvador Allende was deposed by Augusto Pinochet. Pablo Neruda, he was the ambassador of Salvador Allende in France, and he returned to Chile because he was sick. He had cancer, and he knew he would die soon. But at the same time, he was feeling that the government of his friend Salvador Allende would end soon because of the political and economic crisis. So in that moment, he's suffering a lot, and he asked the young Caetano Brulé, because this is the first novel of Caetano Brulé, to help him to investigate a part of his life that happened in Mexico City. And that's how Caetano Brulé meets this very important and big figure, Pablo Neruda. And Caetano Brulé tells him, "You want me to work for you as a detective?" "Yes," says Pablo Neruda. And Caetano Brulé answers, "But I am not a detective." And Pablo Neruda gives him novels from Simenon about Inspector Maigret and tells him and says to Caetano Brulé, "No, it doesn't matter if you are not a detective. If you read these books, and literature teaches a lot, you will learn how to behave as a detective and you will be able to help me." That's the beginning of the novel.
That's so fantastic.
The Neruda case.
That your fictional detective is based on a fictional detective. It's yes. It's absolutely wonderful. Just so great to talk to you. Roberto Ampuero, the Chilean author, columnist, former university professor, minister of culture, ambassador to Mexico, so many things, with this wonderful new book out now. It's published here in Britain, as well as, of course, all over Latin America. And it's called The Neruda Case. Roberto, thank you very much. Indeed. And that brings us to the end of today's show. You've been listening to Meet the Writers. Join us again to listen live at the same time next week, or subscribe to the SoundCloud channel for free and never miss an episode. Thanks to the production team of Weidong Lin and Claire Urban. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thanks very much for listening, and goodbye.